Hi, and you're listening to Dad.fm. I'm Adam Cohen of DadOnRocks.com.
This is Drew Bennett from BenSpark.com.
And this is Jeff Bogle from OWTK.com.
And you're checking us out on Dad.fm. So we are a fatherhood dad blogging podcast. And first out of the bat tonight, we're going to do some entertainment roundup. So Jeff, what's piquing your ear in the music industry these days?
I exist in two worlds in the music industry, as you know, Adam. I am one of the proponents and main voices of the Kindy, which is kids plus indie music world. That is music that exists for families, quality music that exists for families outside of the Disney and the TV realm. So the stuff that 2014 was another amazing year. I published a list of my top 10 albums on Cooper and Kids Catch E-Zine, and then I published a playlist of about 32 songs of my best songs of the year for Red Tricycle National Edition towards the end of December. And so I am still in love with a couple albums from last year. Most notably is the Gustafur Yellow Gold DVD CD combo, the sixth one in that installment. It's called Gustafur Yellow Gold's Wisdom, Tooth of Wisdom. And it is by far his, it's basically the work of one guy, Morgan Taylor, who lives up in Woodstock, New York. Does all the artwork, writes all the music, performs it with a band. But it's soft rock with a twist, definitely influenced. You could hear a little bit of Kiss. He's a huge Kiss fan, Morgan. Doesn't sound anything like Kiss, but you can hear a tiny bit here and there. But it's just quirky, abstract, really beautiful, beautifully done music that this last album, specifically Wisdom Tooth, that if you're not really 100% paying attention, you're just going to be jamming out to just incredible hooks and melodies. The guy can write a hook and a melody like nobody's business. And I find myself often listening to that while I'm making dinner, while I'm at the gym. I actually ran to it a couple weeks ago from start to finish by myself, just in my ears. It's that good that you don't even need kids around to enjoy it. That's the kind of dark, seedy secret of the kindy music world, that parents who are hip to it are often find themselves just turning to it when they're by themselves, which is a beautiful thing. It really speaks to the quality of it. That's one of my favorite albums. It was my number two album from last year, and I'm still grooving to it into mid-January.
Wait, so if that's the number two album, what was your number one album?
Let's see how I did that. I just teed you up perfectly to ask me that. My number one album of 2014 is nominated for a Grammy. I'm kind of pulling for them. I like all the Grammy nominees for the kids' music category, but the Pop-Ups, they're an electro-pop duo from Brooklyn. They released their third album last year called Appetite for Construction, which is totally an intentional play off Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction. It is an album. It is absolutely gorgeous. I call them the Daft Punk of kids music, because it is all just sick beats and really cool songs. This album is really thematic about crafts and arts and collage art and making the maker culture, that the burgeoning maker culture in this country, in the world. And it's an incredible record from start to finish. And that is one that you could totally put on at a party, and no one at all will have a clue, unless they are like kind of lean into the lyrics, like, wait a minute, is he actually talking about making a robot out of cardboard boxes? Is that really what this song's about? Because musically, you would have no idea that it isn't Daft Punk or Moby or some electropop record that's winning Grammys. And hopefully this one will. It is up for it, so we'll know. Maybe on a future episode we'll go over who won. We'll recap who won the Grammy for Best Children's Album.
Very cool. So, Andrew, you're going to talk to us about movies or DVDs, or what do you got for us this week?
I've got a couple things. There is movies, lots of trailers coming out, a lot of things things happening soon. We did have the Golden Globes, although I was not able to watch them. I watch an exorbitant amount of television. I sometimes have a lot of downtime during a particular work time period. Well, I think my biggest claim to fame was watching an entire season of Justified during one session. And, you know, anyway. But I digress. The Golden Globes, I didn't watch it. The only thing I know, you know, in looking at the animated movie category was that How to Train Your Dragon 2 won that category. I know that there was a couple other ones, but the only other one that I really cared much about was Big Hero 6. Was also nominated in that category, and I don't know if either of you guys have seen both of those, or one of those, or any of those. Did you guys see
them? I saw all of the nominees this year, which I think might be the first time that's ever happened. Even though I do write about, you know, kid culture like we all do, I saw all of the animated nominees this year, and I was a little surprised how the Train Your Dragon 2 won. I mean, I liked it, but I almost forgot about it, that it was released last year. The other ones, Box Trolls, which I adored, and Big Hero 6, which I think was the best kids movie of last year. I was a little surprised.
I would tend to agree with Jeff. I actually didn't see Box Trolls in the theaters. I actually just am I just got the screener DVD a couple of days ago. I think the claymation, the animation, that art form in Box Trolls is amazing.
Yeah.
And the CGI and the graphics that were done in Big Hero 6 and the story of it was so beautifully woven. You know, we could digress very further into the plots of Big Hero 6 and talk about how it's a little dark. But I was very shocked that to see a sequel win this year.
Yeah.
And even though it was a good movie, maybe even a great movie, and if you sit there and say it's a Golden Globe winner, that should be a great movie. I sat there and said that this was a sequel. I didn't see, you know, they did introduce a brand new character. They did have some great moments in it. I still, you know, once again, it didn't, you know, carried from an original source. So to me, I think you had to go into it knowing a little bit of the characters, and you got that from knowing How to Train Your Dragon. So I just think it wasn't in a level playing field, but in that regard.
That's right. You know, it's one of the ways to that I like to think about kids' movies, and not, it's kind of like the way some people think about the Baseball Hall of Fame. Sometimes guys get in on pure numbers, but one of the questions is that a player that when you went to the ballpark that day, or you took your kid and you're like, we're going to go see this guy, or you're going to tell your grandkid about later on. With kids' movies, I kind of judge it on my kids. Like, which ones are they clamoring to watch again and again? Which ones are they taking the storylines and incorporating it into their play with completely different themes? Like, they're going to take a piece of a story and use it somewhere else in their life, in their offline life. And while we all enjoyed How to Train Your Dragon 2 very much, it has never resurfaced in my house. Unlike Lego Movie and Box Trolls, Book of Life even a little bit, and most certainly Big Hero 6 are all still a part of their childhood. Whereas Dragon 2, just, we enjoyed it, we got up, and we never really thought about it again.
I would agree, and that totally, you know, we didn't even talk about Lego Movie. That was a game changer, and
it was
in so many ways. You know, they have part of it in Legoland California. If you ever go out and visit there, you could actually see part of the set. It's already been green lit for a sequel, so you know they're making another one. You know, Big Hero 6, there's a great end credit scene that if you're a true comic book hero fan, you would love it. And you know, there are a lot of rumors are going around that there will be a sequel to Big Hero 6 because of the box office take it did. But yeah, very you know, shocking that How to Train Your Dragon won this one.
I'd be very surprised if there wasn't a sequel to Big Hero 6. As far as in our household, we went to see that during the Christmas vacation. We finally got able to get everybody together. And both kids, 3 years old and 7 years old, loved it very much. They do the fist bump all the time, which is something I hadn't really realized, the whole fist bump thing, until we saw the movie. And like, oh, that's why everyone's putting that hashtag on it. And, they just really, really loved it. So much so that I picked up all of the Funko Pop vinyl figures, the entire Big Hero 6 line of figures. And, they're clamoring to play with them. I would like to display them, but at the same time, let them play with them a little bit.
We should put a disclaimer right there, though, that Drew picking up an entire line of toys is nothing out of the ordinary, because he is a little bit wacko for toys. I think we can all safely say that.
But there's also a different disclaimer that we need to put on that, which is Drew actually pays for the toys.
Drew does pay for the toys.
He does not come through one of these things about going to a PR person, asking for it, and getting some swag, and then having the line. He goes to the store, orders them, buys them wherever he needs to get them. But he will complete entire lines. And when you check out dad.fm, we'll have the photos up there of the Funko Pops that Drew has taken and posted in social media. But it is incredible. I will say I am only jealous of one man's toy collection in this world, and it could easily be Drew's.
I run into space issues. Won't lie. It's a little
and
bit
just remember,
crazy.
You run into space issues and you just got the house. Think of how I'm doing in a New York City apartment.
Yeah. That's we're talking about putting a. Well, I'm talking with my dad about putting a shelf all the way around the top of my office, so that I have room to display some of my more favorite things up there. So things that. Until he gets a little bit.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Until my son gets a little more adept at making ladders and such, will not be able to get his hands on. So.
And the type of guy I am, I hear that and I just imagine how are you going to dust them all? That's where I'm coming from, and I blame my mom. I'm just worried about cleaning all of those figures that are going to be displayed.
They don't get that often. So I'm not a big cleaner. I mean, I do a lot of the cleaning of things, but dusting, I have an aversion to dusting. And I think that's, goes back to my childhood where I had to dust and I found it pointless, because dust just keeps coming back. So
keep falling, man.
Yeah. And the other thing, I guess, as far as movies and such, couple of trailers came out this past couple weeks a couple of the Marvel properties. We got the second trailer for Avengers Age of Ultron, and we also got the Ant-Man trailer. So things are getting a lot more exciting about those movies coming out. I'm looking forward to those, and hopefully I'll get to see some of those early. We'll see. But I'll definitely be one of the first in line on the nights when they're showing. So,
can I admit that I was secretly thought that was something about Voltron, not Ultron, and I was a little excited and a little disappointed when it had nothing to do with Voltron whatsoever?
I would like to see a little of a Voltron revamp.
I'm surprised. I mean, everything else is coming back. You would have thought they'll eventually get to Voltron.
I actually heard rumors that there is discussions going around that someone now has bought the license for a Voltron movie, and there's active discussions going around it, especially after they just kicked off the new Power Rangers shoot. So they're coming out with a new Power Rangers movie. And so I do understand that. But in terms of the kid movie scene, this weekend, January 16th, is going to be the
Paddington Bear. Very excited. We're going to see it on Friday.
I have already seen it. I went to a screening of it last week with Nicole Kidman. And
go ahead. Yeah, tell us more about that.
And we'll get a clip of her little interview, and that I was able to ask a question of what books did she read to her children at bedtime. And I will say that Night of the Museum came out during Christmas, and there was another kid movie that came out during Christmas that was really good. But Paddington the Bear was by far my favorite kid movie of the year. And here's the thing that you got to remember. In England, in the UK, it was released at Christmas time. In the US, it's being released on January 16th. And I would say that hands down, if it would have come out during Christmas, it would have been talked about all over Christmas. And it was an amazing movie. Just like the Paddington the Bear was great, and how they interwoven a story about how it's a talking bear as opposed to being like a talking dog in one of the Seth MacFarlane cartoons. It was adorable, and I really do hope that they make this into a series of movies.
Oh, okay. I'm super excited. From the beginning trailer with the train station, and it was just a very stark and minimalist trailer, that very first one, super excited. And the previews, my wife and kids were like a little unsure, like, is it a little too slapsticky? But then I just went on Rotten Tomatoes today, just curious, like, I wonder what the reviews are, and people are gushing about it. I mean, it's like 96% or 98%.
Absolutely.
Like 60 reviews so far. Like, oh my gosh, yeah, I did not really expect that.
It is. I will take my kid to see it. It was a fantastic movie with a great message at the end. It pulls in a little bit of history. It pulls in a little bit of the adventure. And if you look at like Nicole Kidman's rating, it's one of her top rated movies that she's ever done. You know, Hugh Bonneville, who we all know from Downton
Lord
Abbey.
Grantham.
Right?
Lord Grantham.
He was an excellent role in this. He's the dad that is, you know, we're good, we're set, we don't need any more. Sally Hawkins, who plays Mrs. Brown, his wife in the movie, she's the very gentle touch, and she wants to adopt this bear and bring this bear into the family. And then the roller coaster of bringing the bear into the family and seeing this love form for it. It really is that great of a movie.
That's awesome. I'm even more excited to see that. And then Strange Magic next Friday.
So I actually just got home from seeing Strange Magic.
Of course you did.
And on Friday, I am going to the press junket with none other than the maker himself, George Lucas. So I am so psyched about being in that press junket where I'm going to get to ask George Lucas some questions. And so that's...
My invitation must have got lost in the email. I don't
know. You know, some of the perks of being in New York City, I guess. But, But I just came home from it. It is so unexpected. I went into this thinking that this was going to be a fairy movie and it was going to be fighting. And, you know, there's been lots of these kind of movies over the years where Beyonce was in a voiceover with Colin Farrell in one of these kind of little...
Yeah, it looks like epic.
Right.
It looked like epic to me.
It looks like epic, but it is completely not. And the way I would describe this is Strange Magic is a rock opera that was meant for Broadway.
Really?
It is the entire dialogue is sung between songs, some songs very modern and some songs very classic rock. And so you see this. There's not many levels of humor on this, so it's very flat in terms of like either the kid will get it or the kid won't. If your kid thinks when you jam out to classic rock music it's cheesy, they will think the movie will have a cheesy effect to it. If they, you know, it was something I wasn't expecting. And I'm very mixed in terms of my emotions about it. And remember, I just came from it, so I really haven't processed it all out, haven't really thought about it. I thought the CGI in this movie was incredible. You know, Lucas Films has done... The magic in this movie that made this movie, it is incredible. The depth, the hair, the rendering is incredible. The music and how they wove it was really smartly done. It is a fun movie. It is definitely worth taking your kids to see it in the movie theater. Yeah, I think it'll be it'll be a surprise for a lot of people when they go to see it. Like, unlike Annie, Annie was marketed as a musical. And that's what you expected to go into Annie with and during the holiday season. And when you go into the Woods with Meryl Streep, you know, if you do any research on it, it was a Broadway show.
Yeah, my family was a little caught off guard by that, which I just couldn't help but laughing. Like, how uncultured are you? I mean, it's Sondheim and James Lapine. I mean, it's like a Broadway show. How do you not know that you're walking into that?
Right.
I don't understand how people can be alive in the 21st century and go into a movie and not know what you're going into. It blew my mind. My pompous self during Christmas time, I'm just laughing. Like, really? And they're complaining about it. Like, oh, everything was sung. Like, well, it's a musical.
Right. Well,
it's Stephen Sondheim, for God's sake.
I will sit there and say that I didn't know Into the Woods was a Broadway show, and I live in New York. I didn't know. I did not know it was a Tony Award-winning show that was from the 80s that came back in the 90s, and that there's been some revivals of it. I didn't know that. I went into this thinking that this is Meryl Streep, and it's a you know, fantasy tale, kind of like Jack and the Beanstalk that happened a couple of years ago, I guess 2 years ago, when they made a Jack and the Beanstalk movie, and I thought that was like this. It was going to be the interwovens of a couple of Grimm's fairy tales that would come to life in this magical way, very much like we saw in Maleficent, and that we're going to see Cinderella soon, but I didn't think it was a musical. So when I got there and I started hearing the music, I was like, this is interesting. But
can we talk about something? I could spend 10 minutes bashing Night at the Museum 3, but I won't do that.
Really? I actually found it to be the best one of the series.
I was appalled. I thought everybody mailed their performance in. I couldn't believe how bad the acting was in that. I mean, and the ending, I was flabbergasted. Okay, so we're going to get into it. So Ben Stiller's character...
Might as well. That's what we're here for.
Ben Stiller's character is apparently... He spent so many years... I mean, his kid in the first one is like a little kid.
Right.
And now the kid's in college or going about... So he has been at this museum doing this nighttime thing for so many years. We're led to believe that he has such a strong connection to all these people. At the end, he's barely broken up about the fact that it's over. Pocahontas, it's Pocahontas, right? No, not Pocahontas.
Sacagawea.
He's like, doesn't even like hug her. She's across the room. He's just like, see ya, whatever. Teddy Roosevelt, I guess that was touching. I don't know. I didn't think so. I couldn't believe how unemotional. And I get emotional about anything. I was just furious at the way that ended. And all throughout the movie, I'm a little bit of a nitpicky film guy. When they leave London, it's nighttime, and they're like, if we hurry, we can still catch a plane. I'm like, first of all, you've got all this car. First of all, it's nighttime. There are no flights going that direction across the Atlantic at night, number one. Number two, what year is it that you're like, we can still catch a flight? Yeah, let's just show up at the airport. Because apparently it's 1970, and we can just get there and get on a plane. Like, it's nothing. Like, we don't have 4,000-year-old tablets that we're transporting across the country.
Can you imagine explaining that to security?
Right. Yeah, is there a flight we can catch? I got cash I'm going to pay for this one-way flight if I can just get on real fast with, you know, a bunch of mummies and stuff and pharaohs. Let me just on real quick. I couldn't believe how ridiculously poor it was. Everybody was like, eh. And then we were sitting having lunch afterwards, and my family made the mistake of asking me what I thought about it. And I'm like, can I be honest? And then we started talking about it. And even the kids who were like, it was nice, it was fun, once they started thinking about it, completely unprompted by me, other than, like, can we just, like, just spend 5 minutes contemplating what you're
doing? That in the whole theory of this is the problem. Because most people go to the movies, they eat the popcorn, they eat the Twizzlers, drink some Coke or Pepsi, and by the end of the movie, they forgot it already aired. And to me, I left thinking Night at the Museum 3 was a great movie. And the more, and you're right, the more I thought about it, the more I was like, oh, you know, they did miss some things. There was not an emotional bound.
He didn't hug anyone. No one. Even the Pharaoh, when he left London, he left him there. That was like as cold as ice. But then when he was back in New York, and it's like, this is it. The clock's ticking. The sun's coming up. Which somehow, you know, somehow they got back to New York and defied time and got back from London that night. And there was no emotion. I don't even know if there was a handshake. Maybe he shook Teddy's hand. But he didn't hug anyone. I mean, he spent 15 years with these people.
Well, you have to suspend. Remember, at the end of the first one, you see that he's gone on to, was it the start of the second one that he's gone on to be this big television inventor guy that he was inventing glow-in-the-dark something or other for whatever he invented. You know, the whole movie, you have to suspend a lot of belief in this movie. And for me, I think, once again, it does something that it helps the kids with maybe learning about Pompeii. They never really understood. Like, my son was like, what's that? And I'm like, Pompeii is where the island was on a volcanic island. It erupted and people were caught there.
That's cool. But right. And I can suspend disbelief. It's the emotional. It's the parts that you shouldn't have had to suspend disbelief that were missing. The emotional aspect. You're wrapping up a trilogy. You're wrapping up this guy's life with these characters. And it was just dead. There was nothing. I can shed a tear if, like, a puppy. I don't even like dogs. Like, a puppy is missing for an hour, and it comes back, and it jumps into its owner's arms. I'm, like, a little misty-eyed. There was nothing. I just wanted to get up out of my... I couldn't wait for that movie to be over, for the credits to finally roll. I'm like, can we just get out of here? Because that moved me in no way whatsoever. And it's furious. And Steve Coogan, one of the little Centurion guy with the Pompeii scene. I'm a huge Steve Coogan fan. We just got done watching The Trip to Italy, the sequel to his movie The Trip, and it's so funny. He's amazing. He even mailed his performance, and that they didn't. I made a joke afterwards on Twitter. I think, like, so was that written in a regular weekend, or was it a long weekend? Like, I'll give them, maybe it took 3 days to write that script. There was nothing there. It was just like quick cuts. All of a sudden they're in another room and whatever was happening is just over with. Fear.
You know, I will say that I sent a writer in to have the screening and to do the Q&A with Ben Stiller and the cast. And I will say that, the things I saw come back from the Q&A was that Ben Stiller, what it seemed to be like when you start reading through the transcript of the Q&A, these guys all were friends. It's like you're watching their Ocean's 11 and 12 and 13, where these guys were friends and they stay friendly, and there's a camaraderie there. So I could see how it could be like they all phoned in their acting things, because it's like, oh yeah, this is just a kid's movie, and like, let's just call it in. And in some regards, it's like, you know, one of the main characters of this movie, Lancelot, who doesn't know that he's actually in a museum and he's waking up. I really found that a lot of it pulled from Disney's Buzz Lightyear character, who didn't know he was a toy originally. And so you see this main character, Lancelot, who's introduced as a hero, who then finds that he's still on this quest for Camelot because he doesn't realize that he's part of this museum and he's not the real Lancelot. And it had, I thought, a great and very funny interaction with Hugh Jackman, who plays himself in the movie, who's actually in a play called Camelot at the time. And it's just, you know, to me, I thought there were some big plot holes. But once again, going back through this transcript, you know, and even watching the movie, you see that Ben Stiller, you know, plays up a little bit of the stereotype of the Italian, you know, Irish Italian Jew that he is. There's some great lines from Jewish culture in the movie that he puts in there from ad-libbing, I guess. But I thought overall, to me,
well, that's true. That was the best line, the best part of the movie, when the Pharaoh's talking about how good they were and how the Jews, everybody seemed to be happy, and so like, no, that they weren't. They weren't.
Right. We sit around once a year and we talk about how you were so bad to us, you know, a couple thousand years later. Yeah, no, it was definitely an interesting. Yeah, look, it was a holiday movie, but I think the movie doesn't stand on its own all that well when you really dissect it. But I also think when you're in the theater watching it, it's a good enough popcorn movie. Certainly worth the 2 hours to maybe take the kids to a movie and for you to shut your eyes to. But it's fun enough. All right, moving right along. So, you know, we talk about, you know, entertainment, and we've done that very much in depth tonight. But one of the topics we are going to be talking about is that Jeff has a birthday coming up. And so, how do you guys celebrate your birthdays at this point where you now have kids and, you know, are you still having big parties for yourself? Do you try to blow over it as quickly as possible? Like, I definitely know that in terms of my wife, she would rather never have anyone know that it's her birthday ever and just be like, just me and her go out for a dinner date and tell the babysitter, hey, we're just going for a dinner date, and not even tell the babysitter that it's her birthday. But, and for me, I do this month-long extravaganza of, like, multiple dinners with different family members. And you know, for me, I want to celebrate my birthday. But how do you guys deal with your birthdays?
This is Jeff. Jeff here from OWTK.com. I should throw that in whenever I can. So my birthday is coming up on Saturday, January 17th. I'm turning 39 years old. And when you're a dad of young kids, their birthdays are about them, and your birthdays become about them as well. It becomes about them hugging you and about them making you cards or found object art or whatever it is that they put together. And that's awesome. And that is all I need or want. This Saturday I will wake up as I do every weekend morning. I will go for a run and I will shower and I will sit down under my very fuzzy Detroit Red Wings blanket that I'm sitting under as I say this right now. And I will watch football, soccer from England. And then later in the afternoon, we will go and do a 2-hour volunteer stint at a retirement home. All of us as a family playing bingo and reading books and just cheering up some of the folks there at the home. And maybe we'll, I don't know, grab a pizza or grab a burger or something to eat. Nothing special. It's just another day closer to the grave, as I like to say, to make my wife angry when I say that.
Yeah,
I said that on Twitter tonight, too, in a Twitter party. So, like, January 1st, I'm not a New Year's guy either. I said the same joke just about just January 1st, just another day closer to the grave. I'm getting a lot of mileage out of that bad joke tonight. So that's how I do it. I'll shower love and affection on others for their birthday, but for me, it's just want to get up and do my thing and if I get a few extra hugs. I mean, I get a lot anyway. My girls are really affectionate. That's all. That's just gravy on top. Drew, how about you? What do you do?
Yeah, for me,
do you buy some toys? You get up at 5 o'clock at Toys R Us and get the exclusive limited edition Skylander?
No. Usually by April, the Skylander's new stuff's all out. So
true,
I don't do much of the Skylander stuff. For my birthday, I like to. There's a couple of things. I don't want to work. I don't want it to be a day where I go into work. I don't have a 9-to-5 job. I have a 7-to-7 overnight graveyard shift job. So if it's on the weekend, I'll take that day off. I don't want to work on my birthday. What I do want to do is get some buffalo wings because that's the only thing like I really want to eat on my birthday is buffalo wings or a really good steak that I'll cook in the backyard. I'll grill up in the backyard. So if it's a nice my birthday's in April, April 9th, and that's the kind of thing I like to do for myself on those days to make sure that's for me. Spend the day with the family doing something. If it falls on a day, of the week, so like my daughter will be in school, so we'll do something, after school or whatnot. But like for her birthday, I've tried to do something that my dad's done with my sisters, all the time with as they were growing up, is take them to breakfast that morning. So I try to take my daughter to breakfast. And unfortunately, this year my car had a flat tire, so we ended up having breakfast in the parking lot of Cumberland Farms, which was consisted of some powdered donuts. She cries about it now, and I'm sure we'll laugh about it in, 15, 20 years. That's the tradition. But her
or she'll be telling the therapist that in 15 to 20 years. So.
Yeah,
maybe. No, that'll be the one. I bet that'll be the one she remembers. It's always that way.
Yeah.
It'll be the improvised one.
Right. She actually got two breakfasts out of that day. Just try to do something with the family. The kids know I like toys, and they pick out some fun Lego stuff for me to play with, because we do spend a lot of time building Lego items, and they're not as video. I got a 3-year-old; he's not really into the video games. He'll want to play, but he just spends the whole time walking into a wall. So. Yeah. So what do you do? I usually play with him when I want to level up my Skylanders in the battle mode versus mode, so I can just destroy him real quick and move my guy up. I also switch controllers so that his guy is beating my guy and he doesn't realize it. I don't know.
Since you said that, I can't stop picturing trying to figure out how to make you a buffalo wing shaped birthday cake. With a bowl of ice cream on the side and some pistachio biscotti in the ice cream to look like celery in blue cheese. That would be the coolest looking cake, and I'm going to try to figure out how to make it and get it to you.
Well, my birthday also coincides with the first day of a new year of me taking a photograph every day. So I started out on my 31st birthday, and on my 41st birthday, I will have finished 10 years. So, yeah.
And you're on your 8 now, right?
No, I'm in the middle of year 10. I'll be finishing up. Yeah, I turned 41 on April 9th.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I thought you were way younger.
No, I'm the oldest in the group, you whippersnappers.
So where do you catalog these photos somewhere? Do you have them all in a row?
I have them all on a site called ShutterCal. If you go to shuttercal.com/BenSpark, you'll see them there. I actually got my shipment today of all of last year's photos, where with ShutterCal I can print them all out. So I have a shoebox.
In a book form?
It's a shoebox. Okay. It's actually a shoebox with cards as like cardstock. So they are square cards. They're all color coded by month. They have the number, as like, let's see, today would be 3,569, I think. So, yeah.
I will say that there's a sickness in me, because when Jeff, you sat there and said the chicken wing birthday cake, I immediately went to Google and image searched that, and man, there are dozens and dozens of cakes that are made to look like chicken wings with celery and made out of fondant, and there's one platter here that it is sickening looking, because it really looks like chicken wings, but it's all cake, and it is ridiculous. Now going to the photography, I could never, I will admit, very well, I don't have any discipline in life. When I sit there and say I'm going to do a budget this month, I'm not going to buy these toys, I buy the toys. When I sit there and say I'm going to go to the gym, I never get to the gym. But I could never, and I don't know how it's possible that you've been doing this for 10 years, take a photo a day. Because I sit there and I go on streaks. Like, I'll take 2,000 images on a Saturday. But then it'll take 3 or 4 weeks, and then I'll finally dump them onto my computer, come through them, and pick out 8, out of 2,000. But I could never do a photo a day.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, it's just something I started doing, and I just couldn't stop myself. No.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Well, we might have to actually put into effect here at some point. When it gets a little warmer, we'll have to do like one of those 30-day photo challenges and see how we all stack up and compare. But Yeah, that's awesome. And congrats for being the oldest one in this group. So,
thank you.
You get the old man Walker Award.
Now,
you're the youngest, right?
You're the youngest. So, what do you do for yours?
I am the youngest. I'm turning 35 this year.
Wow.
Yeah, I am a 1980 baby. Yeah. But I'm also the first one to have a heart attack in the group, so I'll leave that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I'm good like that. I'm the youngest, but I have the oldest soul, I guess, right? I had a heart attack when I was 30. And so I feel, you know, my birthday has become a very long celebration. Growing up, my parents were divorced, and they still are. Now, happily remarried, my mom and my dad has been, you know, dating and remarried and dating again. And so he's divorced twice over. But in my life growing up, I always had to deal with, like, celebrate with your dad and then celebrate with your mom and then celebrate with your friends. So it was always kind of like, you know, somehow it was like this day would be this party and this day would be this party and this day would be this dinner and that dinner and then see your cousins and then see your aunt and uncle. So somehow I've always kind of grown up with this kind of very extended birthday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's something that I really, you know, for me now, I value it so much more because of my health issues in the past. And I really do sit there and look at my birthday. And I very similarly want to do something that Jeff does, which is I make my birthday about the kids now. I do something that we wouldn't typically do. This past year, we went on my birthday to Governor's Island, which is an old naval base right off the coast of the island of Manhattan in New York City. And it is... it has been transformed from this military Navy base, an Army training ground, to this beautiful parkland that they had.
Yeah, it's terrific. It's beautiful.
And we went there and spent the day hanging out in the green grasses, and they had a food festival there, so we tried some different foods and just hung around and walked around. They have this amazing playground, and it's kind of empty because you have to take a boat to get there, so it's not like, you know, there's no subways, and so you have to wait on the boat. You have to figure out the boat timing, so it's very kind of secluded and remote and, you know, very, very cool way to spend my birthday. And that's kind of how I've been spending it as of late in the last couple of years, is very family-focused, very centric, and then kind of like for the extended week here and the week there, we kind of go out for dinners with different people, different family members, and celebrate. And,
that makes sense. You want to say, I mean, you're 5 years removed from that event. I mean, you, I don't blame you for extending those celebrations and soaking that up, man. That's remarkable. I'm in a way, like, I'm running so much. I run every day, and I have a goal this year to run 750 miles this year. Part of that is because I don't want to have a heart attack.
Yeah.
I was discovered, you know, one of those random occurrences about 18 months ago that I have a blood pressure issue. And they were like, they sent me right to the hospital. Like, it was so bad. On the day it randomly got checked for my wife's insurance, like, I was just had to check some boxes for her. And they're like, you got to go to your doctor right now. And I went to my doctor and, like, you got to go to the ER right now. And I spent like 6 hours in the hospital. I've been on medication since, and I've dropped 30 pounds since that day. And I just, like, I'm basically running for my life. And I had a premonition when I was a little kid that I would not make it to my 39th birthday. I wrote about it a year ago. So I'm 2 days away from that not being an actual premonition, which I'm pretty excited about waking up on Saturday. That this will probably be my most exciting birthday to wake up on, just because that's haunted me ever since I was like 7 years old.
That's pretty scary. Yeah, just think.
A little bit.
Actually, if I were you at this point, I would cocoon myself in bubble wrap and not leave the bed for the next like 72 hours. Like that's crazy. Like I would actually have some, like, I take all my food, bring it to the blender, have the food be blended up so I don't choke. I wouldn't take a bath because, like, maybe who knows, like, some electric wire in the wall is going to hit the water. And, like, I would sit there and literally just watch TV and just be like, I'll be back on Saturday, kids. When I wake up Saturday morning, I will go take a shower, I will shave, you know, and hopefully I don't slip and fall and hit my head. But I'm only just lay in bed for the next 72 days, and I'm like, you know, think of this as crossing the finish line of an epic journey.
Nah, that's not my style. I'm like Ted Williams on the last day. He was batting 402, and nobody had ever batted 400. And he could have just sat out. It was a meaningless game, but he batted. I think it was a doubleheader, too, and he played both games. And knowing that if he took an over, he would have finished under 400 statistically. But that's my style. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep running. I'm going to just finish it off and live and just in the face of that weird fear that's in my subconscious. But hopefully this isn't the last time I appear on this podcast. And
it's over before it starts, all right?
Yeah, this will be a hell of a first episode if that's true. You, you have my blessing to market the heck out of that.
He in this podcast, Jeff himself said he was going to die within 2 days.
Yeah. Yeah, you can get the book rights. You can go wild with it. Have fun. All right.
it's all on you. It's all on you, Drew.
So, well, this was a good chat. This is a good start, I think. I think people are going to really enjoy checking us out on Dad FM as we plow through entertainment and arts and culture from a dad perspective and get more and more into these topics and find out more about each other along the way. It's going to be great.
Absolutely. I really got to say this has been a really enjoyable time. I can't thank you guys enough for being here. And can't wait. Looking forward to all the weeks ahead of talks we'll have.
I agree with both of you.
Have a good week, guys. We'll catch up next Wednesday.
Same bat time, same bat channel. Check us out on dad.fm.